Shri Shukuvacha.
Shri Shukadev Goswami said.
Evam. Thus. Sankirtya. Glorifying. Rajanam. The king. Durasaha. The great mystic yogi Durasa Muni. Paritoshitaha. Being satisfied in all respects. Yayao. Left that place. Vihayasa. By the space waves. Amantya. Taking permission. Brahmalokam. To the topmost planet of this universe. Ahai to come. Where there is no dry philosophical speculation. So translation. Shri Shukadev Goswami continued. Thus being satisfied in all respects, the great mystic yogi Durasa took permission and left, continuously glorifying the king. Through the skyways he went to Brahmaloka, which is devoid of agnostics and dry philosophical speculators. So you can repeat, Shri Shukadev Goswami continued. Thus being satisfied in all respects, the great mystic yogi Durvasa took permission and left, continuously glorifying the king. Through the skyways, he went to Brahmaloka, which is devoid of agnostics and dry philosophical speculators. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Although Durasa Muni went back to Brahmaloka through the spaceways, he did not need an airplane. For the great mystic yogis can transport themselves from any planet to any other without any machine. There is a planet named Siddhaloka whose inhabitants can go to any other planet because they naturally have all the perfection of yoga practice. Thus, Durasa Muni, the great mystic yogi, could go through the skyways to any planet, even to Brahmaloka. In Brahmaloka, everyone is self-realized, and thus there is no need of philosophical speculation to come to the conclusion of the absolute truth. Durasa Muni's purpose in going to Brahmaloka was apparently to speak to the residents of Brahmaloka about how powerful a devotee is and how a devotee can surpass every living entity within this material world. The so-called jnanis and yogis cannot compare to a devotee. So, Shri Shukravacha Hevam Sankirtyaru Rajanam Durvasa Paritoshitha Yovaya Samantriya Ramalokam Ohai to come. So, Om Gana Timinanda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unminitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, just commenting a little bit about what Prabhupada said about going to different planets without any need of an airplane, there was an interesting story concerning His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. I was with Srila Prabhupada in Dallas, Texas. I had arranged an interview at the airport. Prabhupada was received in the VIP lounge of the airport, and we had about, I would say about 20 reporters there, because I had gone around to the different news media and told them this greatest devotee on the planet of the earth is coming to Dallas, Texas. Now, Dallas, Texas is known as the home of the cowboys, if any of you need to know. So, anyway, he was received. We had all the cameras flashing. It was just like paparazzi, basically. And so Prabhupada, one of the first things Prabhupada said when he came was that I came here by airplane, but I could have come by mantra, and I could have come by flying carpet. You know, generally you're thinking that's a Saudi Arabian type of thing. What, 1,001 Arabian Nights? You heard about that story before? Scheherazade, you know, flying carpet. And the reporters, you know, I was thinking, oh my God, what are the reporters thinking of this? Flying carpet. Mantra is one thing, and flying carpet is another thing. And then the reporter said, but why did you choose an airplane? And Prabhupada said, to be one with you. In other words, so they could relate to Prabhupada. And of course, at the same time, that was the motto of the airline that Prabhupada was flying at that particular time, was American Airlines. And the motto was, become one with us, fly with us. So Prabhupada was making a play on words at that particular time. So that's the mystic yogi's power. They can go somewhere. They can even take bath in one river and get up in another river. That's pretty amazing. And so the mystic yogi power, yogic powers are described by Krishna in the Bhagavatam. And if one wants to acquire them, you should study that part of the Bhagavatam and undergo harsh austerities, and maybe you'll get the yogic powers. So you won't have to get on an airplane. However, here in this particular verse and purport, Devrasa Muni has learned his lesson. There's two ways of learning a lesson. One way is by hearing. That's called Shastra. And another way is by the school of hard knocks, as they say. That's called Shastra. You understand the difference in the word Shastra and Shastra? That means if you don't listen to Krishna, if you don't read the Shastra, if you don't listen to good advice, then you have to suffer. And you see this even in devotees' own lives, modern devotees' lives, that when they don't follow the injunctions of the Shastra, the injunctions of their spiritual master, the world starts to fall apart around them, and they just wonder, what's happening? So, that's good advice for all of you. So, Devrasa Muni, after learning this lesson by the school of hard knocks, he became very careful in dealing with Vaishnavas. There's an interesting story in the Mahabharata regarding Devrasa Muni's fear of the Vaishnavas. The story goes as follows, and I think some of you are familiar with it. When the Pandavas were in exile, Duryodhana wanted to cause them trouble. So he thought the best way to cause them trouble is to get them cursed by Durvasa Muni. Because Durvasa, the word Durvasa literally means one with a bad temper. Durvasa. Hey. I'm Parvati. I didn't see you before. Good to see you. Welcome. So Durvasa means one with a bad temper. So he's a Muni with a bad temper. I mean, many of these names that are given to personalities in the Vedic literatures indicate their personality, you know, what they're like. Durvasa. So imagine some sannyasi comes and say, what's this sannyasi's name? Well, he's called a sannyasi with a bad temper. Please don't go to his class. So, because he gets angry. So what happened is that Duryodhana, he was thinking, let me send this Durvasa Muni to the Pandavas after they have eaten. And the Pandavas, of course, had this magic pot, or Draupadi had this magic pot, that as long as she didn't eat, the pot would supply unlimited prasadam of different varieties to whoever was there. And the Pandavas made it their daily sadhana to feed hundreds, if not thousands, of brahmanas. Very interesting. This is the Vedic system that one should receive guests, and one should receive guests with a glad heart. Just like we have our Krishna conscious Sunday feasts, programs, festivals. When the devotees are there and receiving the guests, they should let the guests eat first. I know you don't do that, but many temples, like the devotees, I'm not kind of commenting on this particular yatra. Many temples, the devotees just rush up first in line, and if there's anything left over, the guests get a chance to eat, right? Isn't that the system? It's a system. And devotees don't talk to the guests when they come on Sunday. They just want to have their own social life. So that's not the system. The Pandavas didn't follow that particular system, the ISKCON system. The Pandavas followed the system of gladly receiving so many brahmanas and feeding whoever it came. In the early days of the Krishna conscious movement, that's what we would do, and if there wasn't anything left over, that's all right. Because the whole purpose of the Sunday feast is what? To bring people to the Krishna conscious movement. So, therefore, because Draupadi had this pot, Duryodhana advised Durvasamuni to go there after Draupadi had eaten herself and there wouldn't be any food left in the pot. So, Durvasa arrived with his like 10,000 disciples. He had a lot of disciples, hungry mouths to feed. And they arrived just at that moment after Draupadi had eaten. And Draupadi was besides herself because she understood that if Durvasa wasn't fed with enough prasadam, then he would curse them. And so she was complete anxiety about the whole situation, understanding Durvasa's temperament, and she didn't know what to do. And ultimately, of course, what she did, when there was difficulty or when she was in danger, she cried out for Krishna. And Draupadi is also called Krishna, for the long A at the end, because she is an intimate friend of Krishna. Krishna would sometimes call her Sakhi, and she would call Krishna Sakha, because they were friends. It's interesting. They weren't boyfriends, girlfriends, but it was friends. And there's actually a very interesting book written about Draupadi from the first person perspective, in other words, Draupadi's perspective. And it's a very nice book. It's called, what is the name of the book? Do you remember that? Yajna Saini. That means the girl who was born from the fire. And I highly recommend that book. It's available on Amazon, in case any of you want to read it. Yajna Saini. So she presents in this particular book how close she was to Krishna. That's why she's called Krishna. So she calls out for Krishna. And then Krishna comes and says, what can I do for you? And then he comes into the house, or into the hut, as the case may be, and he asks, do you have anything to eat? And she's in more anxiety because she can't feed her good friend, in addition to not being able to feed Durvasa. So Krishna looks in the pot, and he finds one grain of rice, eats the rice, and he feels completely full, and he burps. Because that's the Indian system. You're supposed to be fed until you burp twice. Twice. Like if you go to India and you don't burp, then they keep feeding you. So you better learn how to do that. In the West, it's considered very impolite to burp during the meal. Very impolite. Everyone looks at you like you're a balacha. So anyway, Krishna burped, and then Durvasamuni, who had been sent away to take his bath, because that's the proper procedure before you eat prasadam, to wash yourself, take a bath with all of his disciples, all of a sudden they started burping, and their stomachs became extended, inflated, and they were thinking, oh my God, what are we going to do? Why were they in anxiety? Why was Durvasamuni in anxiety? Because he remembered this particular pastime, or activity with with Maharaj Ambarish, where he committed the offense and almost gotten killed. And so, by the Sudarshan Chakra. So he was thinking, I don't want to offend Vaishnavas again and come back. I'm sure Draupadi has prepared a lot of nice prasadam for us, and if I don't eat it, she'll be offended, and the Pandavas will be offended, so let's get out of here. So they ran for the hills. Because they were afraid. They were afraid. Durvasamuni and his associates were afraid of the Pandavas. It's interesting. And the Pandavas, of course, were extremely relieved that Durvasamuni didn't show up to curse them. So, anyway, so Durvasamuni learned this important lesson. And just like we have the first defense on chanting the holy names, that offense, of course, the blasphemy of the devotees who have dedicated their lives to propagating the holy name of the Lord, preaching Krishna consciousness. So, oftentimes, when I'm explaining these offenses, I'll explain them in the positive rather than the negative. Because it's difficult or impossible to do a don't. You can't do a don't. So it's a don't do this, don't do that, don't do that. So, I prefer to put things in the positive. So instead of not blaspheming, it's almost like a double negative, and not blaspheming the devotees who have dedicated their lives to propagating the holy name of the Lord, you praise them. You do the opposite. And that way, you never do the negative. So Durvasamuni is thinking, I have to do the positive to glorify the devotees of the Lord. And in this way, I will get their mercy. In this way, I will be protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he's realizing the greatness of the devotees of the Lord. I mean, devotees of the Lord are so great, they can make a dead body come to life and make them pure devotees. I'll tell you a story about that. There's one devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. His name was Saranga Thakur. Great pure devotee. Also, all of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's intimate associates were great pure devotees. And he was such a great devotee, he was not at all interested in anything except for glorifying Krishna. And he wasn't even interested and didn't even want to accept any disciples, even though he was a great pure devotee of the Lord. And the reason he didn't want to accept any disciples is because he was afraid of them interfering with his bhajan. And that's a real important fear, because I've experienced the same thing. Disciples interfering with bhajan, you get the phone beeps at any hour of the time, day or night. Beep. Guru Maharaj. I'm in Maya. Save me. So the middle of the night, 1 o'clock in the morning when you're supposed to be sleeping, so you get up. Okay, what's the problem? So he was afraid, and of course they didn't have mobile phones at that time. But I guess they had mystic powers, so the disciples could communicate with the guru. So you get a beep in your heart or something. So he thought, I'll never accept any disciples. I just want to love Krishna and go back to Godhead. Similar to the story of Lokanath Goswami. You know that story? Lokanath Goswami, not the Lokanath Goswami in our movement, but there's Lokanath Goswami, the associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was sent to Braj to prepare the ground for the other Goswamis of Vrindavan, like Raghunath Goswami, Das Goswami, and Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. He had taken a vow never to accept any disciples for the same purpose. And so when Nara Tomadas Thakur approached him, he refused. But Narottama Das Thakur was determined to accept Lokanath Goswami as his guru. So what he did is he surreptitiously, that means in a hidden way, served his guru by cleaning up the place where the guru was passing stool. And that was, of course, outside. In those days, they didn't have flush toilets and showers and everything like that. And so when the guru wasn't there, when Lokanath Goswami wasn't there, he was cleaning that place. And Lokanath Goswami was wondering who was cleaning that place. And finally, he stays there to watch, and he sees Narottama Das Thakur and Narottama Das cleaning the place. And this is for a whole year this went on. And finally, he gets a dream in which Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chastises him and tells him, accept Narottama Das Thakur as your disciple. And Lokanath Maharaj finally gives in and accepts Narottama Das Thakur as his disciple. So in the case of Saranga Thakur, he was just as determined. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu kept chastising him. And he said, Basically, he said, you must accept a disciple. You must accept disciples. You're getting old. Someone has to take care of you. So, that's the old age insurance for gurus to accept disciples. And for the grahasthas, the old age insurance is to have children. Because nowadays, the children don't do that. But anyway, that was traditional. So you must accept disciple. You must accept. So finally, Saranga Thakur, he says, okay, the first person I see today, I'm going to accept as my disciple. All right, Lord Chaitanya? And Lord Chaitanya said, all right, you're listening to my instructions. So he goes bathing in the Ganges River. And what is the first person, or who is the first person he sees? He sees a dead body floating down the Ganges River. I mean, that's the way that people didn't have enough money or whatever. They just put the body in the Ganges instead of cremating. So what he does, he says, well, I'm going to accept that person as my disciple. And he puts his feet on that dead body. And guess what? The dead body comes to life. And the dead body, or not dead body at this point, the person says, Guru Maharaj. He didn't go through the standard ISKCON procedure. Didn't take the ISKCON disciple course. By that time, people were kinder and gentler. So anyway, so he said to his disciple, chant Hare Krishna. And the disciple started chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Hare. And he gave the disciple his spiritual name, Murari. Sometimes it's called Murari Chaitanya, or Murari, Saranga Murari. You know, anyway, Murari was his name. But this Murari had one challenge, even after he came back to life. Because the way he had died was that he was in the middle of his marriage ceremony. You're just getting ready to say the final swaha. Or put the garland around his prospective bride. And a snake bit him. You know, they have snakes in India. You have snakes here too, right? A few. Lots. So, a snake bit him, and he died in the middle of the marriage. His poor bride's there, his parents, the girl's parents, and they're all crying. That's why they threw him into the river. I mean, because they're really upset. don't try that in your marriage. So, in any case, so the parents came and said, all right, you know, now that he's come back to life, time to complete the marriage. So that was a challenge. You know, because they thought, you know, poor bride, poor in-laws, poor everybody, you know, how to complete the marriage. So this Murari says, no. And his father says, but I'm your father. I did everything for you. I raised you up. I'm your mother. I gave birth, mother saying, of course, I gave birth to you. You must listen to us. That's the Vedic culture. Of course, some of you, if you're from Indian families, you'll recognize that. Not too many people from Indian families. Anyway, so that's the culture. You have to listen to your parents. Take care of your parents. And he said, no, you are not my parents. And they were thinking, what's going on here? He said, because I died. And my real father, Mr. Ranga Thakur. That's right, he died. Mr. Ranga Thakur gave birth to him by touching him with his feet. So, therefore I listened to him. So, Guru Maharaj, what should I do? And Guru Maharaj said, forget about this marriage business. Preach Krishna consciousness. So he became the most prominent preacher there. Is part of Orissa too, in Orissa too. Preaching Krishna consciousness. And he lived happily ever after. So, so many stories. Huh? So that's how powerful a Vaishnava is. Not only can he protect one, or is he protected by the Sudarshan Chakra disc, but he can turn a dead body back to life. And, or actually, even let's more stories about this Murari. He became so fearless after this, because, you know, once you've died and been brought back to life, you know, you're not really afraid of death anymore. Because I guess he remembered everything. I mean, most of us, in fact, every one of us have died before, right? But we don't remember. Why? Because we changed our bodies, according to the Bhagavad Gita. We don't remember our past lives unless we have some past life regression, which we used to do. But it was too traumatic for the devotees. And so we forget. But he remembered. So he remembered, wow, you know, death isn't so scary after all. So he became so fearless at that point. It's described that he used to go up to tigers and, you know, whatever dangerous creatures were, and slap them. Can you imagine that? Try that with a Bengal tiger is not a pussycat. You know, they're as big as cows, basically. And slap them and tell them to chant Hare Krishna. Chant Hare Krishna. So a devotee has that potency. And he's fearless. He's fearless. I mean, there's another devotee of Lord Chaitanya, Gadadhar Das, not Gadadhar Pandit, who was so fearless that he wanted the Qazi, you know, the Muslim terrorist, to chant Hare Krishna. So he goes to the cousin's house in the middle of the night, wakes him up, and you don't want to do that with a cousin or with an ISIS. You know what ISIS is? No, you don't know what that is. ISIS. Anyway, the terrorist. So he went to his house, and the cousin was wiping his eyes, woke up, and he said, "What do you want with Allah?" And Gadadhar said, "I want you to chant Hare Krishna." And the Qazi said, "Oh my God." He said, "Allah, Allah." You know, he said, "Tomorrow I will chant Hare Krishna." And then Gadadhar said, "Oh, you've already done it. How do you go?" So so a devotee can do those things. You know, get the Qazi to chant, and a pure devotee. Or get lions or tigers. I mean, of course, we have the story of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu going through the Jatakunda forest. And as he was going through the Jatakunda forest, of course, he had the tigers and the deer and the elephants. They're all basically kissing each other and chanting Hare Krishna, having a big Harinam Kirtan. Can you do that? I don't think so. So that's the potency of a pure devotee. They can do these things. And of course, then you see so many stories of great devotees changing people's lives, not just animals, of course, people's lives. I mean, there's a story of Murari, who was perhaps the most degraded karata means hunter, most degraded person imaginable. And, you know, not only did he kill animals, the typical story, but he half killed them, just liked to see them suffer. I mean, that's pretty degraded. Can't get worse than that. And then Narada Muni comes around, and you all know that story. And Narada Muni just gives him his association. And then here's this great hunter, this terrible ogre. And he becomes a pure devotee of the Lord, worshiping Tulsi Devi, and just, wow, and not even wanting to step on an ant. That's amazing, isn't it? The power of a Vaishnava like that. When he went to greet Narada Muni later on, and Parvati Muni was there too at the same time, he was hopping so he wouldn't step even on an ant. And then you have the story, the famous story of Haridas Thakur and the prostitute. How Haridas Thakur was able to change this prostitute from being the most degraded personality to being a pure devotee that everyone was worshipping. And even, of course, he was able to convert Durga to chanting Hare Krishna. Of course, she wasn't great. I mean, she was pure devotee. And then you have the story in the Ramayana of Valmiki Muni, who was previously a dacoit. For those of you who don't know what a dacoit is, it means like a robber, thief, killer. And he used to just kill people for a living and steal from them. He would just wait on the path and jump on them and kill them. And so, I mean, it's an interesting story. We can tell the whole story. That as he was doing this, the Sapta Rishis were on the path too. Sapta Rishis being the seven great sages. They were on the path and he tried to steal from them. Of course, Sapta Rishis don't have too much jewels with them. So he tried to steal from them or attack them, and they said, wait a second, we don't mind being attacked by you, but we want you to answer some questions first. And he said, okay, what are the questions? Then I'll kill you. And the question was, do you understand how much karma you're going to have to suffer? And he was an intelligent dacoit. He said, yeah, I know, but this is my duty. I have to go to work, you know, get certain things for my family, my wife, and my kids. And the Sapta Rishis, being very intelligent, said, well, answer another question. Are your wife and kids willing to accept some of your karma? And he said, sure, they love me. Because I give them so many things. I give my kids iPhones, you know, I give my wife, sorry, that's of course a joke. I give my wife saris and everything like that. So he goes back to his wife and says, Priya, are you willing to accept some of my karma? And she says, hell no. I get the money, you do the work, honey. So, that's a husband's duty. So, and then he goes to his daughter and son, and they say basically the same thing. Hey, Dad, just get back to work. And so he goes back to the Sapta Rishis, and the Sapta Rishis are told by him that basically nobody will accept my karma. So he says, what should I do? And the Sapta Rishis, just out of their compassion, they understand he can't chant Ram properly, so they just give him this mantra that means death, you know, Mara, 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 and he begins to chant Mara, 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 and he becomes such a great Vaishnava. He's called Valmiki because that means anthill, because when he was chanting, an anthill grew around him. You know, he's so dedicated to chanting. And so, when the Sapta Rishis came back, they just saw the anthill chanting Hare Krishna, or Ram, Ram. And he became such a great devotee that he was able to picture the pastimes of Lord Ram in his heart. He wrote the pastimes not because he was there watching the pastimes taking place, but because he was able to see on the spiritual television the pastimes of Lord Ram, Sita, Hanuman, and eventually see the what's called the Uttara Ramayana, that means the future pastimes that would occur. And that he was the one to host Lav and Kush, the sons of Lord Ram. And he just became a devotee because of the mercy, the touchstone of the pure devotees, the Sapta Rishis. Amazing stories. And of course, perhaps the most amazing story is that of our founder Acharyas, Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. And he said his miracle was changing hippies into happies. In other words, he came to the Western world, and basically everyone was so degraded. I mean, we think it's just normal. We think degradation. We don't think it's degraded. I mean, we, of course, devotees do think it's degraded, but before we became devotees, we just thought, you know, it's normal behavior. Illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, gambling, you know. What is it? You know, what's wrong with these things? It's human behavior. And so, Prabhupada came, and basically, he wrote in his first poem, he said, I don't know how I'm going to be able to affect these people, only by your mercy. And he said, and of course at the end of that poem, Markandeya Dharma, he said, if it's your desire, you can make me dance, make me dance, make me dance. And by Prabhupada's mercy, touchstone mercy, going into Tompkins Square Park and chanting Hare Krishna, so many people became devotees. Just by a little association. You know, we hear this verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Sadhusanga, sadhusanga, sarvasashukoi, lama mantra, sadhusanga. Sarvasiddhi hoy. Even a little moment's association with a pure devotee gives you all perfection. And even in my own life, I experienced that with Prabhupada. You know, I was worse than Magrari. I don't know. It was that bad. But anyway, it was pretty bad. So I was just like listening to the radio one day, trying to enjoy mundane sounds. And all of a sudden, on the radio, there came this chanting of Hare Krishna, Prabhupada. You know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, etc. And immediately, my life changed. And that's the power of a Vaishnava. Just immediately, I mean, I just like, this was 1969. Took 2 years later to join the Hare Krishna movement because the devotees weren't as merciful as Prabhupada. So, I think many of us experienced that. So, my life changed. Immediately, I basically gave up everything, started chanting Hare Krishna. Didn't know what I was doing, but I was chanting. You know, that's the bhakti life of beach. The pure devotees go around the world. Brahmanda, Brahmate, Konna, Pogiwan, Jeev, Guru, Krishna, Prasadigai, Bhakti Lata Bij. Implanting the Bhakti Lata Bij in people's hearts. And it changes their lives, just like you on Harinam. It changes people's lives. They don't understand what's happening. You know, just a little association. I mean, of course, there's that story when Prabhupada, one time he was taking in a flight somewhere, South America, and the stewardess saw Prabhupada's plate, he was taking chidwa, which means a little fried puff rice and stuff like that. And she said, looks good, and she took a little bit from the plate. Yeah, just a little bit from Prabhupada's plate. The devotees were shocked, you know, what's taking the Prabhupada? But she was taking the remnants from Prabhupada's plate. And then, you know, what is it, about 10 or 20 years later, the devotees we're on Sankirtan in some jungle in Brazil. Not in the jungle, but some small town in Brazil. And they knock on the door, and there's this lady, you know, wearing a sari with deities in her house, Prabhupada's book. And she never visited a temple. Just because she took a little chidwa from Prabhupada's plate, then she became a devotee. This, of course, is the power of a Vaishnava. Krishna say tumar, Krishna dite par. Krishna is yours. You have the power to give him. And, of course, as Narottama Das Thakur writes, I am simply running behind you, shouting, Krishna, Krishna. So, this story of Durvasa Muni and the stories I just told today should be applied, we should apply the conclusion of these stories in our own lives of simply serving the Vaishnavas, Mahatsevam, Purvi Muktes, glorifying the Vaishnavas, appreciating the Vaishnavas potency, and avoiding at all costs criticism of Vaishnavas. Because basically we don't know who we're dealing with. Just like Prabhupada. When Prabhupada was a grahasta, his wife didn't know who she was dealing with, did she? She just thought, oh, it's a vine. He's not behaving himself. That was her conclusion. He's not properly supporting us. He's worshiping Krishna too much. He's bringing too many guests over. This is, you know, imagine what she was thinking in her mind. These Bhagavatams are interfering with my marriage. Let me sell the damn things. That's what she was thinking. She didn't understand. And so what do they say? That we become complacent when we're with people too often. Familiarity breeds contempt, as the saying goes. And therefore it's described, sometimes it's described that neophyte devotees or devotees who are not so advanced shouldn't have so much direct association with the spiritual master and shouldn't do the deity worship either because they become complacent. I've seen that with deity worship, that people go on the altar all the time and then after a while it's just like, Hare Krishna, how are you doing today? High five, you know, whatever. You know, they don't understand that awe and reverence. We think we're more advanced than we actually are. And so we deal with Krishna's devotees like that. And we deal with each other like that. You don't know who you're dealing with. Prabhupada's wife didn't know who she was dealing with. And you all don't know, and I don't know, who you are here. You know, maybe you're some great devotee who... I mean, Prabhupada even said that many of the devotees who joined him in the early days were sent by Krishna to assist him in his mission. So in other words, they're Prabhupada's associates. And yet we dealt with each other just like, you know, sometimes even enemies or criticizing each other. And like nowadays, of course, people go on the internet, and the internet, one of the main things that people do on the internet is devotees, not actual advanced devotees, is criticize other Vaishnavas. You get all these different conferences, and then they get into criticism and all sorts of other things. So let's be very careful, because you don't know who you're dealing with as far as the members of the Krishna Conscious Movement or members of any religion. We should respect. We counteract, as I've just started the class, we counteract the offense, first offense on chanting, by respecting, glorifying, and serving. So that's the message for today. It says we have until... we're over time.
We have a couple minutes.
A couple of minutes is 8:30. All right. Is there any questions, Barbara?
Yes, Maharaj. As Narottam Das of the Sukhi Association, I don't know my name, one of them. It was Narottam Das seeking initiation from Lokanath for Swami, but then the story went that it was Saranga Murari who took the initiation by his position as a deputy. So we're just wondering what was happening to Narottam Das in seeking that association.
Oh, he took initiation, yeah. He was given initiation by Lokanath Goswami. He was the only disciple of Lokanath Goswami.
And Saranga Murari.
Yeah, he was the only disciple.
So two.
Yeah. His only disciple. When you have a disciple like that, you don't need any more.
Two different people.
Yeah, So who's
the Murari
school? Saranga Murari was Saranga Thakur's disciple.
Okay, so Lokanath Goswami, somehow I must have just lost the
yeah. Lokanath Goswami initiated, sorry if I didn't make that clear enough. Lokanath Goswami initiated Narottama Das Thakur. And Saranga Thakur initiated Saranga Murari or Murari.
Well, because you're telling that story, you said Narottam was seeking that association, and then we heard of that story you told, Saranga.
Yeah, I was mixing the two stories. Sorry if I was a little unclear.
Can you tell any more of that, taking of how he took initiation, even though Lokanath Goswami didn't want it?
Well, Lokanath Goswami eventually gave him initiation. Is there another story regarding that?
There might be something more to it. How?
No, he initiated him, but the interesting thing is that Narottama Das Thakur primarily was instructed by Srila Jiva Goswami. So you find amongst the Vaishnavas there so much, you know, loving exchange. There wasn't any sense of proprietorship or sectarianness. You know, that someone is my disciple, someone is my disciple. I mean, they were all part of the same Sangha. So, that's a very important point that we should see in our Krishna conscious movement, that we're all servants of Srila Prabhupada, we're all part of the same Sangha, we're all part of the same family. We have to avoid, of course people learn this in the ISKCON disciple course, but it bears emphasizing more. We have to avoid sectarian spirit. Like with myself, I don't have any disciple meetings because I just feel everybody's the same. That we're all here together, we're all brothers and sisters. And even the guru should consider himself like ultimately a guru. The statement is that if a guru considers himself a guru, he's a guru, like a cow. Nothing wrong with being a cow, but you shouldn't sit on the Vyasa side if you're a cow. You'll break it. So Yeah, we're just one family, and that's the way it was. Like you have Narottama Das Thakur, Shyamananda and Srinivasacharya, they were all initiated by different personalities, but they were just all buddies, all one family. You never find any hint of bringing in the guru issue in relationships at all. So, thank you for bringing that up.
It was just a comment that you're talking about the feast, how we're supposed to, you know, initially we're bringing people.
Yeah.
And I think Jananda Goswami gives a nice funny story. When he first came, I think Guru Grace, it was the Sunday love feast, the love feast, and there was devotees talking in front of him as they're queuing to the Bay Marie and talking, and I hope they still have this left, that left. And when they got there, the devotees in front of him said, well, there's no puris left. Where's the halibut? Or, you know, all that's left was a little rice. So they started accusing the people, the devotees serving behind the Bay Marie. You must be hiding. There must be something you're not giving. You know, and then a whole argument ensued and followed.
Oh my God.
Jananda Goswami is thinking, this is the love feast. So we were on that line, you know.
Yeah, hospitality in the Vedic culture is considered so important that if one is inhospitable, that when you die, the vultures of hell will pluck your eyeballs out. And that's mentioned in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Of course, I'm not saying that'll happen to any of the devotees. But, I mean, there's actually even that story of Sudama Brahman. Everybody knows that story? Sudama Brahman, he was very young with Krishna, and they went to the forest to collect firewood for their spiritual master. And while they were there, they had some prasadam with them, or food. And there was a storm. And that food was meant to be shared by Sudama Brahman and Krishna, but Sudama Brahman ate it all. And therefore, later on, you know, he was bereft of all opulence. Until he pleased his friend Krishna later on and visited him, and then he got a mansion with a swimming pool. But that's another story. But it is a fact, I mean, the hospitality. And it's more pleasing to serve people than to eat yourself. If you really want to be happy, you serve others. To see others, I mean, just like we chant that verse in the morning, when the spiritual master sees the disciples eating Bhagavad Prasadam, you know, chewed, licked up, drunk, swallowed, Chatur Vidat, Sri Bhagavad Prasadam, the spiritual master becomes pleased. Well, we're the spiritual master's representatives. We're Prabhupada's representative. Or representing our spiritual master. And he's pleased. We should be pleased too. Wow, you're taking prasadam. Please, like Prabhupada, he would feed so many japanis to people. Some people would eat 21, 22, 23 japanis in one sitting. And Prabhupada just said, take more, take more. Eat until you're up to the neck. We did that. We followed that instruction, Prabhupada, very, very strictly. And further than the neck, actually. Up to the now, anyway. So, but that's so pleasing, you know, to serve someone. Then you forget about your own belly. As we were chanting last night about the symptoms of Kali Yuga, feed the belly. That's the goal. You're the body, not the soul, right? That, you know, if that's our motto instead of Hare Krishna, you know, feed the belly. That's the goal. You're the body, not the soul. Then we're not really practicing our Krishna consciousness. I mean, we've eaten prasadam so many times. And someone's coming for the first time. Wow. Forget about eating. Forget it. It's not that important. Krishna will give you plenty of prasadam later. Nobody ever starved to death in the Hare Krishna movement. Right? I've seen people, plenty of people lying on the ground moaning because they ate too much. Right? All right, so any other questions or comments? Yes?
Just a little practical question. When the children don't listen to the parents, would you give some advice there?
Tie them up. That's what Mother Yashoda did. You're following in disciplined succession. So, the children are running away now. No, I'm just joking.
Hiding the kids.
Yeah, hiding the kids. Well, maybe the parents need to think of a better way to communicate their needs to the child. Because oftentimes we communicate what we need or what we want from the child as a demand, you know. You have to do this because you're my son, you're my daughter, it's your duty. And as soon as the child hears that, they think, hell no, you know. Because there's a need for autonomy, you know. Nobody likes to be told what to do. I mean, when I was young, I did the opposite of what my mother told me to do. My mother told me that we had a room in our house, and she said, never go in that room, because it's a living room, you know, antique furniture. As soon as she left, went anywhere, it became my trampoline. You know, jumping, but that, I enjoyed disobeying her. Even to this day, I enjoy disobeying my mother, and she's only 90 years old. So, that's a natural need, a need for autonomy in a child. So, instead, take the time and explain to the child why it's in their best interest to do a particular thing. It may take them, you know, another 15 minutes to do it, but then you'll have a better relationship with the child. And the child may listen or may not listen after that, but you have to be willing to sort of accept what they do, unless it's something dangerous, you know. Like the child wants to run in the middle of the street, jump off a cliff or something like that, go bungee jumping. Then that's another thing. Is that all right? So any questions? Other questions or comments? Yeah, another question.
You said the positives. I always feel sometimes we say negatives and even when we say, I have no desire to change. Mm. So is it okay to change the verse?
Yeah, you don't want to change verses. You know, like, I have no attraction for the holy names. Yeah. But you can think positive, please Krishna, give me attraction for the holy names. I mean, that's really, that's the import or purport of that particular verse. That you have invested all your transcendental potency in all your holy names, but unfortunately as I am, I have no attraction. So when you say that, you should be praying to Krishna, please give me attraction. Connect me, give me some connection. But also you should be thinking, maybe I need to treat the Vaishnavas better so I do have an attraction. So again, so I think anything, I usually try to put everything into a positive because it's just, you know, too many negatives, you know, you're not the body, huh? You know, someone comes to the Sunday feast, you're not the body, you're not Australian, you're not white or black. She's not your mother. It is like, huh? And then you think, sure, I'm having a breakdown, mental breakdown, psychological breakdown. So instead of just saying you're not the body, I say, you're a soul within the body. And that's a lot kinder and gentler than just like all this negation, the 1818 stuff. You're not this, you're not that. I mean, it drives people crazy. I mean, I always mention the first time I walked into the Hare Krishna temple, they were so negative with me. You know, no, not only was I not my body, which was traumatic, then Kali Yuga was coming. It was even more traumatic. I was going to be living underground, eating human flesh. I was going to be short, like this. Oh my God. I was going to be turned into whatever I was going to turn into the next life. If I could take a Krishna consciousness in 10 seconds or less or shave my head, you know. If I didn't shave my head, I was going to become whatever. I shaved my hair, not my head. But it was so negative. Then I met Prabhupada. It took my meeting Prabhupada to get me to join the Hare Krishna movement. And then it was very positive. You know, there was compassion and love emanating from Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, you know, even if he spoke a negative, it was done with positive. It was done with love. Instead of just using the Krishna conscious philosophy to beat someone to death and to submission. Isn't it? You're not the body. You have to surrender. Krishna doesn't say in the Gita, you have to surrender. He says to Arjuna, after he advises him to surrender, now do what you want. Right? You make your own choice of it. So Krishna was facilitating Arjuna, not ordering him in the Gita. Which is what we should be doing with people, facilitating their Krishna consciousness, not telling them what they have to do, but helping them understand what's in their best self-interest. I think we have to end now because it's time for prasadam and we overstayed our welcome. All glorious to His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda. All right, I'd like to thank everybody for joining us online this morning. We are at New Govardhan. And you can see the deities for a second. And the devotees. Haribol, all glories to Prabhupada. Prabhupada.